there.
I'd like to call the meeting to order. Apologize for the late start. Floor session ran a little late. Call House Resources to order. It is 1:50-ish. Present Representative Edgemond, Faircloth, Seaton, Kawasaki, Rosas, Wilson, Co-Chair Gatto, and myself, Co-Chair Johnson. Before us today are confirmation hearing for the Board of Game. We have Craig Fleener and Louis Lou Bradley from Palmer. And I think Mr. Fleener is here in the audience, so I would like to begin with him and go ahead and get that out of the way. Welcome, Mr. Fleener, and thank you for coming.
Thank you.
Would you like to start with some opening remarks or just start being grilled right away?
What do you prefer, sir?
I start with this, is why would you, why are you interested in being on the Board of Game? And kind of start with that, and then you can kind of branch out from there.
I like that question. I'm sorry?
Would you identify yourself for the record and so that our secretary can...
Yes, sir. I'm Craig Fleener from Fort Yukon, Alaska. And I guess I've been interested in leadership positions no matter what the issue for my entire life. I've always figured that if you're going to have the best impact, you need to be in a position that where you can actually make a big difference. And I don't like the idea of just talking about problems. I actually like the idea of working on problems, working with other people to try to solve those problems. And so when I was presented with this opportunity, I thought it was a great way to get out there and basically put into practice what has been important to me for a long time and share some of my ideas about wildlife management.
Thank you, Mr. Fleener. Any questions or comments regarding Mr. Representative Rosas?
I have one question. It has nothing to do with the appointment to the Board of Game, but do you have a brother named Brad?
A brother named Brad? No, I have a brother named Mike.
Different Fleener, then.
Yeah.
Any other questions? Representative Kawasaki, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thanks for coming here and volunteering to get grilled today. Just a couple questions. You're probably familiar because you're close to Fairbanks about the cow and calf hunts in 20A and 20B. Can you just tell me your opinion of those hunts? We've heard a lot of anecdotal information from hunters in the area and from the Fairbanks Advisory Committee on the cow and calf hunts, and I'd just like to hear your opinion.
Yes, sir. I guess I can't really give a definitive answer as to whether or not I'm for or against yet, because I haven't really looked at the issue in detail. But I have talked to a lot of people around Fairbanks and several of the wildlife biologists who are close friends of mine, and it's definitely a debated issue. If the population is high enough to sustain a cow hunt, I have no problem supporting a cow hunt. If the population cannot sustain a cow hunt, then of course sound principles of wildlife biology would tell you, wildlife management, I'm sorry, would tell you not to have a cow hunt. So I'd have to take a look at all of the information in detail to really give you a better answer. But if any population can sustain harvest, then there's no reason that we should not allow harvest.
Follow-up, Representative Kawasaki?
No, that's fine.
Representative Seaton.
Thank you. I noticed on your letter that you had served on the Eastern Interior Subsistence Federal Regional Advisory Committee.
Yes, sir.
Can you give me a little synopsis of your duties and how that operation worked?
Well, I served, I think, for about 10 years, actually, and I started out as a board member like everyone else, and then I was actually quickly hoodwinked into becoming the chairman. So I think it was I was the young guy on the job, and everybody jumped me and made me the chairman. But it actually gave me an opportunity to reorganize how the Regional Advisory Committee, how the Eastern Interior actually functioned. One of the things that the Advisory Committee used to do that I didn't like was rush through a lot of debate and issues, especially when certain members of the population got up to speak. Some folks were really not allowed to give their opinions, and I didn't like that. I thought that we needed to have broad, good, long, fair debate, well, not necessarily long, but debate on all of the issues to make sure we could make the best decisions possible. So one of the things that I started doing was actually I reorganized the way that we ran things to make sure that all of the staff that were scheduled to speak spoke in the same order each time so that they could plan their presentations accordingly. and then that we gave the community or anybody in the crowd an opportunity to speak because their opinion was important as well. So that was one of the first steps that I had done. I just didn't like how people were cut off from debate on some of the really important issues. After that, I quickly became chair and ran the meetings for quite a few years. We dealt with a lot of controversial issues, things such as I won't even go into what we've dealt with because you probably are well aware of that. But I enjoyed being the chairman. I actually resigned, though, because I kind of thought that the federal system wasn't really meeting the needs of our people as well as I wanted to. So I think I kind of resigned in protest, although that's kind of counter to what I said earlier, that is being in the position, of authority, you get to have a lot more say. And when you step down from that, of course, you lose the say that you had. So I don't really know if that was a good decision or not. But I think that there is a lot of tweaking needed to make the federal advisory system better.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Bob Reed, Representative Regatto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I notice, Mr. Fleener, in your application that you're a member of the Gwich'in Council.
I'm a tribal member, yes, sir.
Tribal member.
Unless you're referring to the Gwich'in Council International, which is the international body of Gwich'in in Canada and Alaska.
Actually, I'm just curious to know what the position of the council is on subsistence and then what your position is on subsistence.
Well, if you're speaking to about the tribal council in Fort Yukon, then I guess the position, I certainly can't speak on their behalf, but what I understand is subsistence is vitally important. We want to make sure that wildlife, fisheries, waterfowl are managed in a way that produces enough animals for us to be able to subsist, and the tribe, of course, supports any kind of management regime that allows them to have subsistence opportunities in order to meet their family's needs.
Follow-up,
if I may, Mr. Chair. I have a little concern, and you may be able to tell. When we use the word subsistence, it's been a very difficult term that's gone through this building for a decade, if not longer than a decade. And I'm very curious to know about your personal position. Do you believe that subsistence users are defined by the area they live in or by the background that they come from or some other attribute?
That's deep. I think you can take a look at it from a number of perspectives. You could look at it from the federal perspective, which, of course, all rural residents have the right to subsist. If you look at state law, everybody in the state has the right to subsist, not based on your region, but based on residency in Alaska. And, of course, as a tribal member, in addition to that, I, of course, support our ability to subsist as tribal members. And so I've been able to, although this is can be a very controversial issue, I've actually been able to cross or bridge the gaps between a number of those arguments by having worked on the federal in the federal system. I not only brought my perspective as a tribal member but was also able to learn a lot and work with non-tribal folks to make sure that their subsistence needs are also met. So this is a state board, and I will abide by the state laws in making decisions. And so it's a very controversial issue and can be answered in a number of ways.
Follow-up, Representative Gatto.
And thank you. It's the number of ways. I'm interested in how you would answer it. And a very exacting question then, do you believe there should be a rural preference over game?
I guess personally speaking, I've had a problem, I guess, with the idea of the rural preference for quite a while. I think that there are – I support it in some ways, and then I have a problem with it in other ways, I guess. I think that the rural subsistence preference has created a lot of debate and argument in the state, and it's really, instead of allowing us to really work together to solve our problems, to get to providing more meat for the table, that we've ended up arguing a lot. And so I support some components of it, and some components I have a problem with.
Can I continue?
Representative Gatto, please go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So do you feel in any way that the zip code you live in should be considered as far as subsistence is concerned?
Well, other than your residence being in Alaska, from the state perspective, it can't. We need to give fair consideration to all residents in Alaska.
And that's the core I'm trying to get to, is what your consideration is.
Well, in this regard, certainly everyone in Alaska has the right to the resources in Alaska.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Faircloth.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you for volunteering to serve. Can you talk, do you believe that Alaska is a resource-based state? And I'm going back to how we were originally brought into statehood is where the center of my discussion, or your discussion, I'd like you to respond.
I'm not really exactly sure what that means, but we have a whole lot of resources in Alaska, so I...
90% of Alaska's revenue comes from the oil industry. And we get quite a bit of money from the federal level. But we don't really have many other economies that are as vibrant as the oil industry. We have fishing, we have hunting, we have mining, we have many things, tourism comes to mind. But they're such a small percentage of our budget, at least in the short term, that oil and gas exploration are really at the forefront. And so during the tax debate, what I asked constituents of mine were, are we a resource state or are we not? And so I'd like to know first if you believe we're a resource state and that's how we continue to thrive as a state, or do you see us as something else?
Well, it'd be pretty much impossible to argue with the fact that we get the majority of our revenue from extracting it from the earth. So I mean, that certainly is vitally important to the existence of Alaska and how the majority of what you probably are debating on a daily basis gets funded. And so resources, yes, are vitally important. I think it's all of the resources that we have, timber, mining, I think to a small degree, but yes, of course, oil and gas. I don't know how much the state makes in tourism, but I know the region of the state I come from doesn't make much money from that. And the Yukon Flats itself is pretty much a no industry area right now. And we're looking for opportunities, of course, to try to get more revenue to the Yukon Flats. But yeah, I think I'd have to say we depend on the resources that we extract in order to fund our government.
So, Mr. Follow Chairman, if I might. So that said, it follows a bit on the line of Representative Gatto for the subsistence issue. But could you speak to me on your position on the polar bear and its listing as an endangered species?
Well, I'm not a polar bear expert, but what little I do know, I think that I think we need to take a look at all of the species in the state from time to time and see how they're doing as a population, as subpopulations, to determine whether or not we make drastic decisions like that. I don't know the numbers of of polar bears. I don't know if they've been increasing or declining. As far as I know, their populations in Alaska are fairly stable, I think. And I'm sorry?
It's increasing, as I
Yes, I think their population is fairly stable. And so personally, I would be very cautious in listing something that is stable. And I think what you end up doing is trying to predict the future of a population based on information that may or may not happen. And so while I think we need to manage wildlife populations cautiously, I don't think that I would recommend listing something on the endangered species on the idea that they that their population might be declining. We don't even know, at least I don't know, I can't speak for we, but I don't even know if polar bears can adapt. Maybe they can adapt to the changes that are coming. It certainly is a possibility. There have been some big changes in the Yukon Flats. Climate impacts have changed weather patterns, changed wildlife patterns, changed fire patterns, and I've been able to adapt. Of course, I'm a little different than a polar bear, but I think we need to take a look at each population individually, each broad group of animals individually, and deal with them when the time comes. I mean, I think we need to be cautious, don't get me wrong, in how we manage resources. But if a population is stable or increasing, and it's not been listed, I would have a problem listing it.
Additional follow-up, Representative Faircloth?
Thank you. With your training as a wildlife biologist, you may bring to the table some specific criteria that you would make judgments on that. And I guess I would put on the table this afternoon that extinction and life cycles are part of a normal process of evolution of the world that surrounds us, and that extinctions were happening prior to human intervention in that process in trying to help Mother Nature along. And so, speak to me as a biologist, if 90% of Alaska's oil comes, or I'm sorry, that we monetize and our revenues are coming from development, whether it's oil or mining or whatever, and we have an animal that is endangered, your comment was speaking only to a stable or an increased. What if there's a decline? Would you jeopardize Alaska in your position on the Board of Game? Its entire revenue stream by labeling something in decline or considered for a list that you know would tie Alaska's hands in accessing our resources. That's where I'm trying to get to.
Well, I'd hate to be labeled as the guy that tied Alaska's hands, that's for sure. But I think that in this position, it would be, if a population is in decline, I would absolutely have to take a look at how we can protect that species. I mean, that would be the goal of my position, to make sure that we are providing opportunities for hunting, to make sure that populations are safe and stable. And so I think that would have to be my number one priority as on this board. So I don't want to do something that would jeopardize another part of the government or really hurt some segment of the population by any means. But if a population's in decline, I think as a Board of Game member, I need to make recommendations that would try to prevent the decline, stabilize the population in some way, or if possible, to increase the population.
Additional follow-up, Representative Faircloth?
Again, speaking as a biologist, that's what concerns me, is that we're only looking at upward movement of populations. Isn't there a natural ebb and flow of a decline depending on the weather and the environment? Do we believe that human intervention is necessary for a small decline? I'm just trying to see the balance that a biologist would give. And we can have contrary opinions on this, and I would still vote to recommend you and your name forward. I just want to understand the rationale and hopefully have an opportunity to advocate that that wildlife is wildlife, and sustenance for all of Alaska is important to provide nourishment and mental health, but heating someone's home is important too. And so how do we make that balance as wildlife intersects with providing the means for us to provide education for the state of Alaska and other things? Thank you.
I think I've grappled with that issue for quite a few years, and of course wildlife populations fluctuate, and the thing to keep in mind for a hunted population is that you have to monitor hunted populations a lot more closely than you would monitor not hunted populations, because humans are having much greater of an impact on them. So you're not only relying on nature to control the ups and downs of populations. when you get into wildlife management, you're primarily managing people. You manage access to resources. You manage how many someone can go shoot or snare or trap or whatever. And so those, the decisions you make and how people harvest become really important, especially with populations that fluctuate a lot. And so I think that if it's an unhunted population, we don't do much, and we allow nature to take its course. Snowshoe hare is a good example with big ups and downs that are regulated a lot by the lynx population, which in return, of course, are regulated by the snowshoe hare population. So it is a cycle, and it's something that we need to monitor. Nature takes care of itself in a lot of ways, and sometimes we just get in the way, actually. But if you have a heavily hunted population, we need to have a stronger hand in how those populations are managed. And so if you end up driving a population down because you've allowed harvest or whatever, then you need to have a more active role in managing those animals. And sometimes it comes with reducing access, reducing bag limits, and sometimes stopping hunting altogether until populations can recover. And those are all important management tools.
Representative Faircloth, follow up.
Thank you. Last one. Could you speak to populations being located in other countries and on the incline as a herd, and then to climate change? Because at least for the polar bear as a specific species, the conversation has been around climate change and their environment versus hunting, which I think that you spoke very eloquently to that management style.
Are you asking, ma'am, about other populations of polar bears in other countries? I wish I could speak about that. I don't know how the populations are doing in other countries. As far as I'm aware, folks are still allowed to hunt polar bears in Canada, which means that their population, I would assume that their populations must be fairly stable.
If I could clarify.
Representative Faircloth.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It doesn't have to be on the polar bear on this one, but if the example is the polar bear, because it is on the rise in other countries as well, as in Alaska. But my issue is, if we're managing just our own region and it has to be on the incline, or is there a consideration that the population may be moving because of climate conditions?
Yeah, if you have adjacent populations like you do in Canada and Alaska, you have to consider, it would be wise to consider the entire range for that population. You can't stop management just because we have a border. I mean, you shouldn't. Unfortunately, we actually do. But there are some good mechanisms in place where we work with Canada. The 40-mile caribou herd is a good example where we've worked internationally. Salmon issues, good examples of where we've worked internationally. And so, yeah, you have to consider broader populations when you're doing management, just like we do with salmon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Kawasaki.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thanks, Craig. A follow-up to that question I meant to ask earlier, dealing with the cow and calf hunts in 20A. If the local advisory group or committee were to come up with an opinion that the cow and calf hunt should end in 20, would you go along with that recommendation, or what would be the process and procedures for you to make a decision?
I would have to take a look at the carrying capacity of the habitat. I'd have to take a look at predator populations. I'd have to take a look at human harvest of the resource. I'd have to take a look at the moose populations themselves in comparison with historic numbers, long-term numbers. I'd really like to take a look at the health of cows. You know, what, this kind of sounds kind of crazy, but rump fat thickness, you know, how actually the cows are doing over winter, the vegetation in the area, whether or not it's being heavily impacted. I'd like to take a look at twinning rates to see if they're healthy enough to be generating a lot of twins. So I would take their recommendation into consideration. Of course, you would have to. That's the purpose there in place. But I would want to take a look at the biology. And then once you've taken a look at biology, you have to take a look at, you have to consider the management regimes that are set in place in order to make decisions. So I would take a look at all of those, and hopefully I haven't missed too many.
And I can see from your education you have a real clear background, and and I appreciate that there's a member of the board that'll have a real good science background. So would you say that your opinions would be based on a scientific approach to management?
I think some of them would. I also like to eat moose meat, so I think I would not only use my science background, I would use my upbringing and consideration of people's needs. You know, sometimes you can't just solely make a decision based on science. And so I think you have to consider the needs of people as well and what their desires are.
I have a couple more.
Especially when you have, I'm sorry, especially when you have really controversial issues like whether or not we should allow cow hunting.
Okay.
That's a big issue in the lower 48, and in some places deer populations are in the millions because people are socially afraid of shooting cows, or not cows, I'm sorry, what do they call it? Does. No deer where I live, so got to get the nomenclature right.
Representative Kawasaki, follow-up?
Not a follow-up, separate questions.
Separate question.
You mentioned some controversial issues, and I've got a couple others. Aerial wolf hunting, would just like to hear your comments on aerial wolf hunting as a general issue.
I think that if wolf populations can sustain hunting, that we should allow people to hunt them in a lot of different ways. I would have to take a look at that specifically and take a good listen to the pros and cons about it. But just coming into this, I think that if populations can withstand harvest, that I don't like the idea of controlling methods and means too much. I think people should be allowed to hunt and fish, just hunt in this case, in a lot of different ways. And so I don't necessarily like the idea of limiting people if populations can stand, can withstand it.
And
Representative Kawasaki?
In a preference, would you prefer the state do aerial wolf hunting, or would regular hunters do aerial wolf hunting?
If you're talking primarily about predator management as a means of reducing wolf populations for the sake of prey populations, if that's where you're going with the question, I don't think that we should take any tool out of the bag of the Department of Fish and Game. I think we should allow equal consideration for any good idea and really be considerate of doing things that would take care of the problem in the quickest, safest way and cost the least amount of money. And of course, once again, and this is a big issue, is dealing with the human consideration. You know, what are the people going to think? That of course needs to be considered as well. But I don't really like tying the hands of managers if they come up with good ideas.
Okay. I got more.
You got more?
I got more.
Representative Kawasaki.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Whenever you're ready for a break, let me know, and we'll slip Representative Roses and Gatto in there.
Sorry about that. Mr. Fleener, how about, then you mentioned what people will think, wolf denning has become sort of an issue that's come up recently. I'd like to hear your opinion on wolf denning.
I think I get my opinion from this based on growing up in and around Fort Yukon, and denning was talked about a lot and how important it was to keep wolf populations in control. And so it is an effective and valuable tool to control wolf populations. I don't know the specific issues in regards to the state or what the board might have discussed to this point, so I would have to take all of that into consideration. But just from my upbringing, we've talked a lot about it, and it used to be an important tool for us. So I think that I would, I guess that's the perspective that I come from, and that's really all I know. Since the state hasn't done much wolf denning, I haven't formed an opinion from that side of the issue.
Okay. Got two more.
Representative Kawasaki.
I noticed that one of your publications early in 94 was dealing with wood bison and sustainability in the Yukon Flats. I'd just like to hear a little bit more about that. I'm pretty interested.
I love talking about wood bison.
How about the brief? I think we're...
Oh, no. Okay. well, I,
We'll hang around after the meeting and you can fill us in.
I've been supportive of reintroducing wood bison into Alaska, and since 1991 or two, I think. Wood bison used to be in Alaska up until maybe 100 or so years ago. And they're not the plains bison like we actually have here. Those bison don't belong here. They're not a northern species. They should be in the plains. And wood bison are indigenous to this area and currently only exist in Canada, unless the Department of Fish and Game has managed to bring some across the border, which they're in the process of doing. So I'm a big supporter because it, in the Yukon Flats especially, it brings a large grazing herbivore, which we currently don't have. We have small grazers like mice, but we don't have a large grazer, nothing that's eating our grass. And so it would actually help the ecosystem, and it would provide tourism opportunities. It would it could provide a lot of benefits by basically reorganizing the habitat as it exists right now. Creating wallows actually creates a new types of habitat for waterfowl and other species. And hopefully I get to eat some someday. Okay. I'd like to get the problem we have in the Yukon Flats is either the lowest or the second lowest moose population in the state. And so if we could get wood bison up there to supplement our food resources, I'd really like that as well.
Representative Kawasaki.
What's your opinion on Executive Order 114 dealing with moving habitat back into the Department of Fish and Game?
I don't know if I have an opinion. I think I was surprised when it was pulled out initially, and unfortunately I haven't thought enough about it to give you a good answer, and I think I'll stick around a little bit to hear you talk about it, and maybe I can formulate an opinion then.
Okay. Two more.
Representative Kawasaki.
Arguably, one of the reasons why we're hearing you today is dealing with regional representation on the Board of Game and some comments that have been made on the third floor and certainly around the building. Do you think that the Board of Game is currently a diverse board? And what do you think you would do to enhance that in the future?
I think after I got the phone call that asked me if I would like to be on the Board of Game, I got pretty excited and started looking online at the newspaper articles and saw even some of the concerns that just having me doesn't make the board diverse enough. And so unfortunately I don't know the Board of Game members that well. I know of them a little bit, I've read about them a little bit, but I don't know if I could actually pass judgment on the diversity of the board. But what I read in the newspapers, which maybe I shouldn't be forming my opinion on, it's probably not the best place to do it, but a lot of other people think that the Board of Game needs to be more diverse. And so I think diversity is a good thing. I think we need a good cross-section of the community, if you want to call Alaska a community, a good cross-section of people who depend on those resources to give their input. Folks from different backgrounds, such as commercial backgrounds, subsistence, you know, people who solely subsist on the resource, people who are sport hunters. I think more diversity is better than less diversity.
Then follow up.
Just two more?
Yes.
Representative Kawasaki.
Speaking about diversity, commercial, subsistence, sport, what about the thought that there should be members of the board who are not hunters?
Not hunters? Well, when you consider the board itself, it's the Board of Game, and the term game refers to animals that are specifically hunted. They're not farm animals, and they're not there to be taken pictures of. They're there to be consumed. And so I'm not necessarily opposed to the idea of having a non-hunter there, but I think you end up putting somebody on the board that may not be there for the best interest of what the board is designed to do. The board, I could be wrong, but I think it's there to manage these resources so we can all enjoy them, I guess. And I'm not opposed to the idea, but I think that it could be fairly controversial because I think it's, I think we need to, that's a tough question. It could present some problems. I like the idea of managing, of us having an understanding that we're managing these resources because people are hunting them. And I think that needs to have a priority consideration, but I don't necessarily have a problem considering putting, at least considering other folks. And I guess I'd have to leave it there and look at it in more detail.
I guess then,
Representative Kawasaki,
would you consider wildlife viewing a use?
It's not really, is it a use? I don't know if you could consider it. It's not a consumptive use because you're not killing them. Whether they're managed or not, you can always take a picture. I think it is a, I think it's an important thing for us to, well, you don't even have to allow for it. People can take pictures anytime they want to. So it's not a consumptive use, but I guess it is a, it's a pastime. I've taken lots of pictures of animals. I don't know if I would consider it a use, though, because I'm not really using that animal. I'm not touching it. I'm not taking it home. I'm taking a picture of it.
And just last question. Seriously, last question.
Representative Kawasaki.
Are you, or have you ever been a member, paying member of the Alaska Outdoor Council?
No.
Thank you.
Are you done, Representative Kawasaki?
Yes, sir.
Not rushing you. Mr. Freener, I'd like to congratulate you. I think you've probably done more to draw my colleague from Fairbanks out in conversation than anyone I've seen in this committee. So if nothing else, you've done that. Representative Gatto.
Thank you again, Mr. Chair. And Representative Kawasaki just brought up a thought to my mind. You're on the committee, and you have someone testifying on non-consumptive use. And his statement is, or her statement is, if you kill moose, you've taken away my ability to photograph them. How would you answer that?
Well, I'd have to agree that the moose that's in my freezer is not very photogenic. So I think as far as that is a true statement in that regard, but that Alaska's wildlife populations are some of the best managed in the country and that there are plenty of opportunities in a lot of places to take pictures. We have the majority of our lands are federal lands or an awful lot of them. Are federal lands in the state where there's limited hunting in a lot of places where there are lots of opportunities to take pictures. There are moose walking around in Anchorage in parking. Not that you'd want to take a picture of one there, but I only point that out because there are parts of the state where there are a lot of moose, and it seems like a lot of tourists go there, and there are a lot of restrictions on hunting in those places. So there are a lot of photo ops and photo opportunities. Now you go into some of the more rural parts of the state, there may be fewer photo ops because moose don't want to hang around people as much as they do in Fairbanks and Anchorage. And so I think I probably have already answered the question, but I think there are plenty of photo ops and we manage our wildlife populations in many cases to the point where there are going to continue to be a lot of opportunities for photography.
Follow-up, Representative Gatto.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I'm going back to a statement you made, and I think I've got it right, but go ahead and correct me if I don't. We should not make a decision based solely on science. Was that the statement you made?
I think that was pretty close. It sounds like it's going to get me in trouble, though. No, I'm just kidding.
Well, you're a scientist.
No,
I would think that you'd certainly want to include science. But would you say, listen, except for science, I really don't want to hear your opinions? Or is that really a statement you would stand by?
Science and the answers we get from science are always changing. A good example is escapement goals for salmon up our various rivers. Science once said that we need to have X number of salmon going up Y River, and we've adjusted those numbers based on new information, changing information. So the reason I said that we don't solely want to go with science, because science will give you a hard number in a lot of cases, and you may want to adjust for a variety of reasons, social being a really big issue that you include. So I would never say I don't want to hear what you have to say just because science dictates this. I want to hear what everybody has to say.
And I agree with you. Science can be off considerably. We can always do a moose count. That would be science, and yet we could be completely off. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Edgeman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Greg, nice to meet you before the meeting and chat a little bit. I've had an opportunity to look at your resume and your background, and it seems pretty impressive and very varied. Everything from Head Start to the military with academics and a bunch of other things in between. But was your name submitted by, let's put it this way, was your name originally submitted to the Board of Game or to the Boards of Commissions for consideration, and I say originally before February 8th? I understood AFN submitted a handful of names. Your name wasn't on that list, was it?
I don't know the date that my name was originally submitted. I actually received calls from about 12 people around the state saying, we're submitting your name, and they didn't really even ask me. No, I'm just kidding, they asked me. But there were a lot of folks from different places, but I really can't say the date. Yes, my name was submitted. I don't know when. I think it must have been in the original go-around, because I was told that I was being considered and I couldn't be found. I was actually in the Yukon Flats during that 70 below weather, and no one knew where I was, is what I was told. And so I guess they can't put your name forward if they can't find you.
Yeah, and that's, Mr. Chairman, that was the basis of my question, because I it just seems to me with your background and your experience in science and all the various positions you've held that you would have been a strong candidate the first time around, and I was just wondering why that wasn't so. If I could follow up, another question might be the time that it takes to be a Board of Game member. I think it's, if I recall, I'm doing some research for somebody from my district who was interested in being a potential board member. It's November through April, largely, and 25 days, then you're on committees and this, that, and the other. But that, as far as you can tell, isn't going to pose a constraint for you to be a full and active member of the board.
Well, I've been on lots of boards and committees, and I think it'll definitely pull a lot on me. But I have done this, not this particular board, but boards and committees for many years, because I think that that's where you can have a lot of impact. And so I've adjusted my life around serving on different boards and committees. I think I was on 17 different boards and committees at one time. And it makes for an interesting life, that's for sure. I'm not on that many now, thank God. But I know it'll be a major part of my life, but I think that it's important. And yeah, that's it.
That's one more question.
Representative Edgman.
I was going to ask about your opinion on, maybe I should just ask it, your opinion on the governor's House Bill 256, which is active game management. I think you've answered it in various ways, but have you looked at the legislation? Do you know what it's about? Or
no, I'm sorry, I haven't. Can you give me a brief synopsis and then I can...
Well, the bill would change the standard for management of predator controls, I understand it. Others around the table know better than I do. From I think the current law speaks to normal biological conditions, and this would change the standard to high level of human consumption in terms of predator control. And there's a ballot this fall that would raise that standard to emergency biological conditions, and so we have a lot going on in that whole arena. that's probably an unfair question if you hadn't had a chance to take a look at the bill.
And I certainly would not want to put him on the spot if he doesn't know specifically.
I agree.
About it.
Last question, if I could, that's unrelated.
Okay, I would like to, we do have another person who we would like to hear today, and I would like to get to him, so I would like to expedite expedite this. We do have members that need to go to another committee immediately following this. So if it's on a different subject, I certainly want to entertain any questions. We want to vet all the candidates thoroughly, and I don't want to speak anymore because it's taking up time. So I do want us to be a little expeditious if we can. Okay. Representative Edgeman.
Quick question. In the media lately, don't read what you believe in the media, but the Yukon Flats land swap, any opinions on that vis-a-vis your appointment to Board of Game?
It's a huge issue, and the folks in the Yukon Flats are, of course, very concerned about wildlife populations and want to maintain a good, healthy, clean environment ecosystem because subsistence is such an important issue. I have been one of the few folks, I guess, that supports oil and gas development, and I certainly don't support oil and gas development because it's going to destroy the ecosystem and kill all the animals off. As I pointed out earlier, the Yukon Flats is one of the lowest income generating parts of the state. A lot of people are unemployed, maybe upwards to 80%, and we need some financial opportunities. And if you take a look at the Yukon Flats itself, the development that's proposed by Doyon would occur in the southernmost part of the refuge, right next to the White Mountains. And historically, there has been, especially most recently, it's been one of the areas in the Yukon Flats where there's the lowest amount of subsistence. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that it's not important. The people in the Yukon Flats will tell you that it's still a vitally important place and that wildlife populations move around. So it's a big controversy there. I have supported the project because we need to do something to boost the economy, to get people jobs. The Yukon Flats is broke, and broke, I mean, doesn't have much money, and we need to do something to change that. And, you know, there's no industry in the Yukon Flats. There are no roads other than the one going to Circle, and there just doesn't seem like much hope in generating revenue for that area other than this. And I realize that it's short-term revenue, maybe 30 years if we're lucky, but if we manage the money wisely, I think we can make it last long into the future. But I think, you know, if we do things smartly, I don't think that we have to destroy the environment. I think we can manage things really well. Alaska has some of the best standards when it comes to oil and gas development in the entire country. And so I think we make sure that those are put in place. And in addition to that, if Doyon is involved in the development, Doyon being the Native Regional Corporation, they have a responsibility to their shareholders to make sure that the ecosystem is not destroyed. So we have a double mechanism to try to do the best development that we possibly can.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Fairclough, briefly, if we could.
Representative Kawasaki mentioned the Outdoor Council as an individual organization, and you said that you weren't a member. Are you a member of any preservation or conservation groups that we should know about?
No, I don't think I'm a member of anything. I was a Boy Scout, or I was a Cub Scout a long time ago. I think that
we appreciate that you've been a member of our military. Thank you very much, and a citizen of the state of Alaska. Lastly, quick one, Mr. Chairman.
Follow up, Representative Fairclough.
Is the polar bear prey or predator?
Well, it's preyed on by people, but it preys on a lot of other things, so I think it's both.
That was the right answer. thank you.
Representative Roses.
Thank you.
I haven't forgotten you, Representative.
Yeah, you did. You passed over me a long time ago. That's okay. I'll forgive you. When I first read through your resume and your background, I certainly was impressed and felt that there was no problem in my supporting your position on the board. But as you've testified, I've changed my opinion from supporting you to being enthusiastically supportive. I think you've done an outstanding job of representing yourself and your knowledge, and I look forward to seeing you serve on the board.
Thank you, sir.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I wanted to make the comment that as I sit here listening to your answers, they haven't been pat answers. They've been thoughtful answers. They were individual answers so that depending on the situation, they might change. And I'm very impressed by that. And if I was having anybody representing myself on that board, I'd be proud to have you represent. Thank you.
Any additional questions for Craig? Thank you very much. I would also like to echo Representative Rosas, and I'd thank you for your service to your country and continued service to the state. With that, we will move on. Appreciate you coming, and thank you for being here. Lewis Bradley, are you online? Mr. Bradley.
Can you hear me?
We can. Would you please state your name for the record? I guess you represent yourself, and tell us why you want to be on the Board of Game.
Okay, my name is Lewis Bradley. I'm retired, and I've hunted and fished for 35 years in Alaska, and I see lots of changes happening, and of course, change is inevitable, but like Craig said, I want to be a part, as big a part as possible, because I want in the future to have the resource available for my grandkids and future Alaskans. And so I, you know, I have a big interest in, and that's the biggest reason why I would like to be on the board to have as big an impact as I can.
Thank you. If you just go ahead and answer all the questions that Mr. Fleener answered. No, just teasing.
Well, I'm probably not going to be able to answer them as well. I was listening in, and he did a great job. I don't have the background he has as far as you know, wildlife. Mine's more practical, I guess. I'm older than he is.
Thank you. Are there any questions for Mr. Bradley? Any questions? I'm sorry, Representative Fairclough. I'm asleep over here.
Well, Mr. Chairman, this is for the same board, so I think it highly unfair that Craig had to sit here, as you know, and Lewis and I get some of the questions. This is Representative Fairclough. Lewis, could you? Good afternoon. Thank you for submitting your application. Could you speak? I was talking about the polar bear and the issue of resource development versus management, good management of our game. Could you speak to that briefly?
You know, I think you have to, you know, what you've been reading, of course, what you're reading and what's actually happening, I'm not sure. That's one reason why I want to be on the board, because I'm writing a book and I tried to get some information and stuff, and some of it I couldn't get. And so I, hopefully in this position I can get better information than I was before. But as far as the polar bear is concerned, you know, all animals are important. And well, I've read that there's, you know, with, of course, like you said, the you know, the environment, you can't stop. If there's global warming, slow that down. If that's a natural process that's occurring, that the polar bears are evidently are getting caught out in the ocean, swimming out as much as 200 miles, and getting caught in storms and stuff like that, and then they're finding them washed up on the beach. Now, if that's true, then there must be a problem somewhere, and of course, science out. I'm concerned about the polar bear, and I don't want to see them become extinct, whatever we can do to help them. On the other hand, humans are part of the equation, and being able to live and is important also. And so I think that with our technology today, we should be able to help the polar bear and also be able to extract resources in a responsible manner, and so that everybody wins.
Follow up, Representative Fairclough.
Thank you, Mr. Bradley. Would you do you support listing the polar bear as an endangered species?
I would say no, unless I was, you know, heard more from the standpoint that you know, I know they're hunting them down in Canada and maybe in other places, and so I'd have to hear hard numbers as far as and when you list them as an endangered species. I guess you have to consider also what is that going to do as far as tying up development and other things. And so I know that can be a problem, so you'd have to take that all into consideration. And so I'd say no based on what I know now.
Representative Fairclough.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And just for equity issue, do you serve or are you a member of the Outdoor Council or any other conservation, preservation, or hunting?
I don't. I take magazines from quite a few different, like FNAS and things like that. But as far as other than that, I don't.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Additional questions for Mr. Bradley? Representative Rosas.
Thank you. Mr. Bradley, did you bring your name forward, or did someone contact you and ask you if you were interested in serving?
I was contacted by Mr. Bailey and said that my name had been mentioned by people and wondered and was I interested in. I told him yes, and that he said I would need to send in a resume. And then after I got the resume, then or after I sent the resume, and then I received an interview.
Okay. Follow up, Representative Rosas, or are you done?
Okay. No, just one more out of curiosity than on the board, if I might. I noticed on your resume that you were the head basketball coach for Wasilla Middle School for 26 years. So, therefore, were you the governor's basketball coach?
No, I taught physical education, and I coached back in those days. It was pretty much well, I could have coached the girls, but I was coaching the boys. And did most of the boys' sports, although I did girls in gymnastics. But as far as coaching Ms. Palin, I didn't. It was Jerry Yates was her coach.
Representative Kawasaki.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And thank you, Mr. Bradley, for coming before the committee. I have a question on what you think your qualifications are as far as the Board of Game goes. It's arguably one of the more in-depth groups. They do a lot of research, get a lot of information from the advisory committees and from the commissioner's office. And I'd like to hear just kind of your comments on what qualifications you think you bring to the board.
I have a lot of experience in the field as far as I read and stuff like that, and I really have a great deal of thought for the game and wanting to be here in the future. And so I am willing to put forth the effort or whatever it takes to become knowledgeable as far as what fishing game with the biological I'm writing a book here, and so I've been doing quite a bit of in-depth study on sheep, and so I know their procedures and stuff that they go through, and I've having hunted for the last 35 years, I spend 2 to 3 months out in the field collecting horns that are drops and stuff like that, and winter kills because I carve antlers. But I have a lot of friends that have been out there, and I know the animal population is not what it used to be in most cases, and that there's not an unlimited supply anymore, and so I'm concerned about that, and I don't have the wildlife management background, but you're talking about diversity on a board. I think that if you had all wildlife managers, might not be good either. All I can bring forth is as far as being honest and try to decipher what would be the best for her. I think you have to consider people, but you also have to consider the game as a for it to be there in the future. You want to manage for abundance, but you as far as I think I'm kind of all the way around the subject there and not really hitting it that much as far as qualifications. I do have somewhat of a science background, a minor in college, I just have a strong interest, and I think I serve on that capacity is all I can say, really.
Mr. Chairman, on that point.
Where are you, Representative Kawasaki? Representative Fairclough.
Mr. Chairman, just on that point. Mr. Bradley, I think I had to be 18 and a registered voter in the state of Alaska to run for this office, as well as energetic and I would say honest. So thank you for that, and I acknowledge that we all bring different things at different levels to the table, and I appreciate your interest in wanting to serve your state in this way.
Well, thank you.
Any additional questions for Mr. Bradley?
Mr. Chairman, how much time do we have?
We have about 10 minutes, and we have three people that want to testify. I know that members of this committee have to go, so I'm going to ask the public testimony to limit to 3 minutes tops, and that's going to put us right up against the gun. So, Tom Banks, are you available?
Yes, sir.
Would you please identify yourself, who you represent, and be mindful of our time restraints?
Tom Banks. I'm the Alaska representative for Defenders of Wildlife. And I had an opportunity to look at the nominees for Board of Game. I've been attending Board of Game meetings regularly for the last year and a half, gone to all of the meetings. I'm familiar with their work. I had an opportunity to speak at length with Mr. Bradley the evening that I learned that he was nominated on January 31st. And while I found him to be congenial, and I find his resume as excellent for being a teacher, with all due respect, I have to say that I find him severely underqualified to serve on the Board of Game. He has been a sheep hunter. However, my speaking with him, and I think his testimony today indicates that he's just not up to speed on the important wildlife issues that the board faces. It's a serious position. It's one that does allocate wildlife for a wide variety of uses in the states, or rather in the state. Defenders of Wildlife is made up of both hunters and non-hunters. We don't have a single agenda. We are proponents of rational wildlife management for the benefit of the ecosystem and for all the Alaska citizens as called for in the Constitution. And so I don't come at this with a predisposition. I interviewed Mr. Bradley and told him who I was, and he was respectful and very respectful to each other and had a long conversation. But I told him at the end that I could not support his nomination, and I believe that there are others who are waiting in the wings who have served on the board before, who have wanted this position very badly because they have a lot of experience. And so that's my opinion. That's Defenders of Wildlife's position. There are others, for example, George Matz, a previous Board of Game member who currently...
Mr. Banks, we're not here to hear about potential members. We're here to talk about the one before us. Do you have any other testimony?
Just this, that the Alaska statutes 16.05.221 say this, that the Board of Game members shall be appointed on the basis of interest in public affairs, good judgment, knowledge, ability in the field of action of the board with a view to providing diversity of interest and points of view in the membership. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Banks. You might want to stick on the line. There may be a question or two. Representative Roses?
Thank you. So, Mr. Banks, so would you say that the Defenders of Wildlife then clearly believe that the only people to be should be serving on the Game of Board are those that have a specific background in wildlife management? I mean, isn't there room on there for the individual consumer to be represented? Or an individual layperson?
Through the chair, I accept your point. However, in this instance, Mr. Bradley's nomination does not add any to the diversity of the Board of Game. There are all the rest of the Board of Game members are also consumers of the resource. There is no one currently on the Board of Game that really provides, well, I won't go that far. I just believe that Mr. Bradley's nomination, unlike the others, he's just not as qualified and lacks addition of diversity.
Follow-up, Representative Roses. Representative Cotto, did you have a question for Mr. Banks?
No, thanks.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Banks. Appreciate your testimony. John Topplenberg, are you available? Would you please state your name for the record and identify whom you're with and commence your testimony, mindful of our time frame?
Thank you. Thank you to the committee. And my name is John Topplenberg. I'm director of the Alaska Wildlife Alliance. I was part of the conversation that Mr. Banks had with Mr. Bradley some time back. We were calling from Juneau at the time. And I did find him to be an extremely nice guy and quite knowledgeable in the specific realm of doll sheep hunting, and I appreciate that. But from the perspective of myself and the organization I represent, that's hardly an adequate qualification to serve on this board. I would note that the state constitution mandates that the board represent all Alaskans, and if Mr. Bradley had another area of specialization, in tourism, in wildlife photography, those sorts of other interests that Alaskans utilize wildlife for, and the people that come up here spend a lot of money in Alaska, et cetera, have uses for wildlife under those circumstances, perhaps I could view this differently. But during the conversation I had with Mr. Bradley, while I was very congenial, I asked him a series of questions about issues that have been in the media. I asked him for specifics, the dynamics of some of those, and quite frankly, he was totally non-conversant, admitted that he did not know anything really about these various issues, and I cannot help but conclude that he is not qualified to be on this board. I can't help but believe that Alaska can come up with far better qualified candidates than Mr. Bradley. Thank you very much.
Representative Faircloth, you have a question.
Yes, thank you for your testimony, and again, thank you to Mr. Bradley for putting his name out there, as well as our other applicant, Mr. Fleener. It is a risk when you put your name forward that other people's comment in a way that might not be as flattering as you would hope. That said, I understand that it's just as difficult for those to come forward who may not appreciate to the full extent another person's willingness to serve. So I appreciate both points of view, but to you, as a representative of the Alaska Wildlife Alliance, did you also do the same type of interview with Mr. Fleener?
No, I did not. His background, his resume was adequate for our purposes, and I appreciated what he had to say before this committee. And for now, anyway, we certainly support his nomination. You know, he has a management background, biological education. Those are things that Mr. Bradley does not bring to this equation. And I just cannot in good conscience support Mr. Bradley's nomination.
Representative Faircloth, follow-up.
That said, does your organization support Mr. Fleener's? You had an opportunity then to go back in the short time frame that we've had in the last 2 weeks, chosen not to interview but have a statement from Alaska Wildlife Alliance that you support Mr. Fleener's nomination?
No, I'm not going to go that far. I'm just going to say that for now, from what I know at this point in time, we're not going to oppose it. That may change at a later date.
Thank you very much.
Representative Gatto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You said that you wanted to make sure that members of the board showed diversity among the members. Is there any other member on the board that has been in the field 3 months a year for 30-some-odd years who has run pack animals through the wilderness and taken clients through the wilderness and has a trade dealing with carving? Is there any other member on the board that would even resemble that qualification?
Well, I'm not sure that in this context that would really amount to that great qualification, quite frankly, and certainly none that I'm aware of. It's true the other members of the board are, to the best of my knowledge, members of the Alaska Outdoor Council, and I would note that Mr. Bradley is not. I suppose there is some level of diversity there, but certainly he does not represent anything vaguely similar to the interest of the non-consumptive users, which would be something that my organization might be interested in.
Any additional questions for Mr. Toppenberg? Mr. Willis, Wade Willis, are you online?
Yes, I am.
Would you identify yourself, where you're calling from, and who you represent, if anyone?
Yes, my name is Wade Willis. I'm calling from Anchorage, and I have the unique position of being an avid moose hunter and subsistence fisherman, and also make a living wildlife watching through a tourism-based business for sea kayaking, rafting, and hiking.
Mr. Willis, are you representing yourself, or are you part of the...
Yes, I am just representing
myself. Okay, thank you.
I want to state that I strongly support Mr. Fleener's nomination to the board. I think he is an excellent appointee for the board. And I, too, want to state that I can't support Mr. Bradley at this time. I think he's a fine, upstanding citizen, but, you know, his testimony just further enhanced my feelings that he just really doesn't have the qualifications to deal with the complex issues presented to the Board of Game. Mr. Bradley states, you know, he wants to be on the board so he can enhance his knowledge for his book. You know, that directly highlights his lack of qualifications and motivation, in my opinion. Also, he did not, you know, independently seek the position. So that worries me in some ways, too, especially compounding with the other issues of his lack of biological experience or his lack of participating in the Board of Game process. He doesn't state that he's ever testified at Board of Game meetings or attended. And, you know, he doesn't have any work qualifications with resource allocation issues or anything. So, anyway, I think he's a wonderful man, a great advocate for hunting, and, you know, he's just a great guy, but I just don't think he's there. You know, the actions of the Board of Game have the potential to have very dramatic effects on industry in Alaska. For one, you know, tourism generates the highest numbers of jobs of any industry in the state. Tourism also brings in the highest net revenue to the state coffers of any industry other than oil. And it brings in $50 million in 2005. You know, you can't ignore the fact that summer tourism is comprised of 99% wildlife watchers. You know, tourism businesses like mine make a living. You know, I actually put meat on my family's table by watching wildlife. You know, the actions of the Board of Game have the potential to have very dramatic effects on this. The Board of Game is mandated to manage our wildlife resources for the benefit of all Alaskans. That mandate alone should squelch any thoughts on whether non-consumptive users or consumptive users should completely be made up in the Board of Game. They are mandated to represent non-consumptive users. So, you know, you need that kind of diversity and strong management experience on the Board of Game to address user group conflicts. That's a common problem in Alaska. You can't address user group conflicts, consumptive versus non-consumptive, effectively if you stack the entire Board of Game with representing 15% of the residents of the state.
Mr. Rose, can you wrap up, please?
I sure can. I don't feel that Lewis Bradley will add to the diversity of the Board of Game or provide the background qualifications that citizens need for such an important position. And I would love to expand a little bit if somebody would like to ask me.
Thank you, Mr. Willis. You can also submit, and I say this to all of you, submit your testimony in writing. We'll make sure it advances with the committee recommendations. Any questions of Mr. Willis? Is there anyone else online to testify? Is there anyone in the audience who would like to testify? With that, I'd like to close public testimony. I'd like to thank everyone for testifying. I'd like to thank everyone for attending, and those who may or may not be appointed for their testimony. With that, what is the pleasure of the committee?
Mr. Chair, I move the House Resources Committee forward the names of Craig Fleener and Lewis Bradley to fulfill positions on the Board of Game membership to a joint session for consideration.
Are there any objections? Hearing none, so be it. Any other business to come before the committee? We will take up Executive Order 114 at a future date, either the next meeting or depending on when the co-chair and I get together and decide that's what we need to do. Representative Seaton, did you have a question or are you?
No. Mr. Chairman, I was just wanting to clarify that we're forwarding the names for consideration.
Correct? Absolutely.
Correct.
So that everyone knows this. We're not
We are not the approval
voting for or against. We are.
Absolutely. Anything else to come before the committee? I would like to thank everyone for their attendance today. Sorry for the late start. We'll get on the speaker next week to make sure that before we leave, make sure we sign everything. With that, it's a little after 3. Thank you for sticking around, and we are adjourned.